This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Calling Grass Nation, we are conducting an audience survey at gum.fm/touchgrass. And we want to hear from you so that we can keep making content you love.
You know this. We know this. There are ads on our podcast. Mm-hmm. We want to improve that experience. But in order to do so, we need to know a little bit more about you, our audience. This survey is quick, easy, and a free way to support this podcast. It'll take 2 minutes and you'll be helping us out so much by doing it.
Yes, so go to gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our audience survey. That's gum.fm/touchgrass to fill out our survey. Thank you for using your precious time online to help us with our podcast.
We love you.
You got mail.
I'm Millie Tamaris.
And I'm Elise Morales.
And this is Go Touch Grass, the podcast where we log in.
So you can log off.
Elise and I are two chronically online comedians. And on this podcast, we break down the week in internet discourse, viral memes, TikTok trends, and niche influencer drama so that you can literally do anything else with your town.
Absolutely. Anything. You can take a nap.
You can take a refreshing midday nap. Elise famously, her whole family, her husband, her dog, and her cat, they take a family nap every day at 3 p.m.
Sometimes we can't, but I will say that we siesta.
They definitely siesta because I'll text her something kind of virgin, and she's like, sorry, just woke up from the family nap.
family nap. I do want to preface that sometimes I'm not able to nap at 3 p.m. because of other...
All Elise's bosses are like, okay,
like, excuse me, you bill us for 8 hours a day. all right. And guys, if you like what you hear today and you want to hear more, we've got a Go Touch Grass Patreon already up and running with our test episodes, mini trending topics, a weekly newsletter, our spinoff series, Search History, where we break down a viral discourse from the past. We've got one up right now about Chewbacca Mom. Very interesting questions posed. Yeah. About Chewbacca
philosophical questions. Is she a milkshake duck?
We don't know. Listen to the episode.
And don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review. As many of you know, we hit over 100 reviews on Spotify and on Apple. I think we're almost at 150 on Apple.
Wow.
And recently, in addition to our Patreon episode, we have out already last week, we released or put a pin in the discourse video episode. It's very fun. Please check it out. Anyone can watch it.
It's free on the Patreon.
Editing was so stressful. I had to re-fucking render the video 20 times.
Yeah, that's Millie put in some work to edit this thing. So go watch it and leave a comment about the special effects and graphics that Millie added.
I watched too many tutorials. And guys, that's my penance for pirating Final Cut Pro. Also, in that same vein, I do want to apologize to our community because there was no newsletter last week because editing was so stressful. We had our live show.
And thank you to everyone who came out to the live show. That was so much fun. We do have recorded audio. We have to, like, see how that sounds and if we can release
I saw the waveforms and I'm like, I'm going to have to pirate another fucking editing. We're going to see
if the live show will be coming to you. But if not.
The show went really well.
So much fun. We had great guests, Chris Murphy, Brandon Follick. Yes. We discoursed together.
Yes.
Thank you to Y'all Fest. Thank you to everyone who came out.
Thank you to Y'all Fest. Thank you to everybody. And yeah, we're going to have that up for our listeners in Canada and New Zealand. We love you.
Yeah. Wow. Our international, Grass World.
Part 5. Listen. That's enough housekeeping. We are super excited for our guest today.
We are.
He's a stand-up comedian, writer, Go Touch Grass newsletter subscriber.
Yeah, which is
one of the first.
Millie had to apologize immediately.
I had to apologize because
you didn't get your email this week.
You didn't get your email this week, but it's coming. He's also a filmmaker, and he tours around the country doing stand-up in Spanish.
En Español.
And his biggest credit, though, is being my personal friend. Welcome, Angelo Colina.
Yay, another friend episode.
So happy to be.
All episodes are friend episodes, but
I'm so honored to be part of the Grass Nation. That was the one I liked the most, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah. I was pushing grasshoppers for a while, but grasshoppers, it's okay. Grasshoppers is horrible. But
it has a bad connotation. I recently rewatched The Bug's Life. And
that is true. The grasshoppers are the capitalists.
They're the capitalists. They're the oppressors. They're right. Anti-worker. Yeah, so
right.
You know,
I think Grass Nation is right. And then I'm loving Jurassic Park. Jurassic World.
Jurassic World
for the international.
I'm not.
You're not.
I might cancel my Patreon.
Oh no!
If you keep Jurassic World.
We need that dollar.
Don't wheel.
Okay, Angelo. Question for you before we begin, so that our listeners can get to know you. You use social media to connect with your fan base all across America and in places that I didn't even know there were Latino communities. You're going all over. You are finding
places.
He's
going to Louisville, Kentucky.
He's going to Louisville, Kentucky, and he's saying, habla
español. Habla español.
So, like, what are some things that you have noticed about the crowd across the United States, like, in real life versus social media?
I feel like people are thinking that most people that are coming to the show are Latinos by default because they are the ones that speak Spanish. But what's crazy is that I run into a lot of people that have lived abroad and they've had their like vacations in Colombia or Argentina or Mexico, and so they're practicing Spanish.
Oh,
and so
nice.
But usually they're white people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they pay for VIP.
That's
and
great.
And then I start the show, and the first faces I see are people who are not just like following as quick. But it's funny, you know, and they like it too. And they love being.
That's a really interesting point of like people trying to get connection to the community and basic. Yeah, but still like in places that aren't necessary.
Shows are being gentrified. That's what I wanted to say.
But I was going to say, I think buying a VIP ticket to Angelo's show is a great way to use your privilege as a white fan.
Yeah.
No, I mean, keep doing it. Por favor. Yeah.
I have always felt, because I am someone who, like, I suffer from a lack of confidence in speaking Spanish because I know how it's, like, supposed to sound. And I've been around it in my life. And I know that I'm, like, not saying it exactly right. And, like, I can tell. And so I get in my head. And I always feel like I wish I had the confidence of like a white guy with like absolutely 2 semesters of Spanish 1 under his belt, like the way they will just go for it.
I would say I have confidence, but we did a show on Thursday in Spanish that probably was the worst show I ever did in my life. And it completely ruined my confidence. And I'm like, do I know how to speak Spanish?
No, but just to be fair, I'm going to tell you this. That's the same way it happens to us, like for people, like I wasn't born here and I've only been here for five years. And so when you start learning,
from Venezuela,
and you have to start, you know, even if you don't feel, and that's how like my mom's learning, my mom didn't know anything. And now she's like practicing and she's in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's not like she has a choice.
She has
to do it. And you just like, even if you don't feel confident, like that extra step of like, okay, also, it doesn't need it. It's not supposed to. I was a Spanish teacher too, and an English teacher. It's not supposed to sound anyway. It's just supposed to get the message across. Especially you, because your family's Cuban, right?
You don't need to sound Cuban. That's what Angelo's trying to say. Is that Cuban accent? It's not even
you being understood.
I love Cuban accent.
Yeah. I will say when I was in Spain, my Uber driver asked a question that is literally the question that you prepare for in a Spanish textbook. He asked me, what is the weather like in the United States? And I was like, I have trained every day for this day. I was like, in the East, we've got seasons. We get snow. In the West, there are not as many seasons. And my husband was in the back like, what are you? He was like, you're fluent in Spanish. He's like, what were you guys talking about? I was like, I couldn't even begin to explain. I felt like a fucking king.
One of my favorite anecdotes of Angelo's, because Angelo has this huge fan base across America. One of my favorite anecdotes about Angelo is that he took an Uber and he told his Uber driver was Mexican. And he's like, I'm doing a show. And the guy came. And what did he do? What happened?
Yeah. So the guy, he, so I honestly love speaking to Uber drivers. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that's the best way to get to know a place. I mm-hmm. always ask them because they're around. And so I told him we were doing a show in Spanish, and we were in Denver. And so mostly Latinos who are in Denver are Mexicans. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, at first, it's usually weird for them to go to a show of a Venezuelan, you know. Mm-hmm. They will go to a show of another Mexican. And so what we were trying to say, it's like, no, everyone comes like to shows in Spanish. And I invited him.
They'll go.
I invited him to the show and he came. But like we gave him tickets for mm-hmm. free and he brought his wife and but he was like, oh, no, I can't have them for free. I'm like, yeah, please. We're inviting you. And he was like, okay, I'll bring you something. And he brought homemade like burritos.
He brought two homemade burritos for Angelo.
They were huge, and they brought it to me in the green room. Yeah, and they were amazing. They were great. Yeah.
And this is just the benefits of touring around and doing shows in Spanish.
And Latinos are wholesome. Like Latinos are wholesome. They're a wholesome crowd, I would say.
They're going to bring gifts.
They're going to bring gifts. They're going to be encouraging. Just final question before we get started. Do you think there's a major difference on how Latino people use social media versus like any other group that you've noticed?
Yes. I feel like Latinos are very strong in social media for just one reason. We know what's happening here, mm-hmm. but we also know what's happening back home. And so it doesn't go the other way around. You know, like whatever's happening in America for Anglo, like speaking people, like just English speaking people, it's like it's just gonna stay here. Whereas I can get a reference of a joke from somebody in Argentina about their Argentinian president. Mm. And so they know whatever's happening with us here. And that's why when you see like any Latino, like even I noticed that when we're being reposted in stories of shows, they have a lot of followers. Like the average of followers Latino have, it's way bigger than people here. A lot of people here have private accounts with 80 followers. Mm-hmm. Whereas the standard for Latino can be like 800 or 1,000 followers.
Yeah.
It's like that's a standard. It's just a regular guy who knows a lot of people. You know, it's just like models and fashion bloggers and influencers. Like there's so many mm-hmm. of them. And I feel like we can be very strong when it comes to numbers.
Yeah.
Wow. Good to know. Well,
maybe less precious about like sharing other people. Yeah. Like you're more likely to like share and repost and mm-hmm. get like.
It's all because social media is about community.
Yeah.
And just, you know, Latin. And not that other places don't have community, but it's like a big value in Latin culture to like be all about your community and everything like that and share and post and stuff. And those are behaviors that we've talked about, the algorithm rewards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's the same thing, you know, I teach stand up and like teach like digital comedy and stuff. And one of my students was like, oh, I post tweets and like no one ever likes them. And I'm like, well, how many tweets are you liking? How many things are you sharing? How many things are you reposting? Like, that's all part of like.
Yeah, it is like a give and take, which is something that I have noticed in kind of like, I guess I would say like white alt comedy spaces is like people who are super withholding with their social media interactions and then are also like, why does all my shit flop on social media? And it's like, because it's a given. Because
you have a private account.
Yeah, exactly. You have a private account with 80 followers.
I can't
and you
share
never,
your post.
Because you never repost shows you're on. And so when you have a show, people don't repost yours. Like, there is a give and take to how this shit is done.
And also, I mean, it's just natural. Like, I have friends who anytime I do something, they're sharing. They're like, oh, my God. And then when they have shit, I'm like, oh, shit. Like, I got to support them, too.
Yeah, so exactly.
It's all about give and take. Things that you can learn. Sorry, Donald Trump. There's a lot you can learn about Latinos.
Yeah.
Sorry. All right.
Sorry, Donald Trump.
And speaking of Latinos, let's get into our discourse.
Wow, I'm excited.
It's fat. It's juicy. It's ripe for the picking. Guys, we're going to cover today, we're going to dive deep into one of the most prolific Latin artists in the U.S., Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, my God.
And we're going to get into a very interesting allegation against her today. Today, Angelo and Elise are going to help us decide if Jennifer Lopez is allegedly responsible for the death of a certain TikToker.
Oh, God.
Okay. before we get to the alleged
calling my lawyers, I know. putting my lawyers on speakerphone immediately.
You have lawyers. That's great.
No.
Before we get into the alleged murder, that's a Traitors reference. We've got to share some context, background knowledge on J-Lo, Jennifer Lynn Lopez, now Jennifer Lynn Affleck, was born on July 24th in the Bronx, a borough of New York City, and was raised in its Castle Hill neighborhood. Her parents, David Lopez and Guadalupe Rodriguez, were born in Puerto Rico and met in New York City. Jennifer Lopez is also known by her nickname J-Lo. She's an actress, singer, dancer, and often dubbed the queen of dance, quote unquote. Lopez is regarded as one of the most influential entertainers of her time, credited with breaking barriers for Latino Americans in Hollywood and helping prepare the Latin pop movement in music. I feel like this last sentence of her bio was written by her team. I have to preface that. She also has been noted for her impact on popular culture through fashion branding and shifting mainstream beauty standards. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, okay. That last one, I'm like, okay, by girl. Looking still really youthful and well, by girl. Still being hot.
Exactly. She's challenging
because you're really, really rich.
Yeah, I know. Ben Affleck became Jennifer Lopez's fourth husband when they married in 2022. Another Us Weekly, this is from an article, another Us Weekly source said that Affleck has kept the megastar, quote, grounded through her recent career challenges and insist, quote, she doesn't really care what others think. So let's see if that's true, guys. I'll also add, too, that it's pretty well-known lore that J-Lo is insanely difficult to work for, and there are hundreds of stories out there of times she's been disrespectful to staff, to people she's worked with, all that stuff. Now, not every rumor you hear is true, but where there's smoke, there's fire. So that's just, okay. So, right, so that's who J-Lo is. And basically, right now, J-Lo is what online people call in her flop era. Mm-hmm. It's because this year she released two films and an album and she self-financed in a three-part media extravaganza. The album and the two movies she financed for $20 million of her own money. The first film, This Is Me Now, A Love Story, is a visual album that has a story arc. And I'm going to kind of recap for the listeners and for you guys who maybe have not seen it. I'm going to do my best to recap everything that's in, and I wrote this down, that's in this visual album.
Okay.
It was weird and looked like a perfume commercial. The premise was that she was in love and was on the back of a motorcycle and crashed and almost died and then dated a lot of people. There was a heart factory sweatshop with only female workers. There was a glass apartment complex where you can see all these other relationships and glasses breaking and there's rope play. A bunch of celebrities like Kiki Palmer, Jane Fonda, and Trevor Noah play Zodiacs in her mind, I guess. There's a very cute wedding montage scene where she changes grooms four times to hint that she got married four times. But it also made me think that when I get married, pink and maroon as wedding colors would be a slay. Fat Joe plays her therapist.
Okay, that rocks, okay, come actually. On. That,
she killed with that.
Yeah, that's
that
really
already
good.
Makes me watch the movie.
Okay. She goes to an Alcoholics Anonymous type meeting for being addicted to love. And in the meeting, people start modern dancing. And then the movie ends with her doing a rendition of Singing in the Rain. And Ben Affleck plays a Donald Trump type character.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
in a different part, yeah. Well,
honestly, it sounds just like High School Musical to me. Yeah. And would definitely watch it now.
Okay. She made a documentary about the process of her making the visual album.
Okay.
And the documentary, which is The Greatest Love Story Never Told, the documentary is basically everyone telling her how much of a bad idea it is for her to make this movie and her ignoring them. And then there's a part where she reads Ben Affleck's love letters out loud to her staff, and you can tell he was deeply uncomfortable.
Oh, no.
It took a while because no studio wanted to buy it, and eventually Amazon purchased the project for a rumored portion of the $20 million price tag and released it in February.
Okay. Thoughts? I mean, I remember so this far? Coming out. Did you watch any of it?
No, but I watch... I mean, I know what it is about, I think. Yeah, especially after that, after all yeah, that.
Well, I think I did a good job.
You did a really good job. Like, I kind of want to watch it now. But the thing with it is it's just so self-revolving, you know? Mm. Like, it. You know what it is? She hasn't gone touch grass.
Yeah.
In a while.
Wow. It's been a while.
And see, this is what happens when you sign up to our newsletter.
You're there.
You're part
of the Grass Nation. You're exactly. just flowing.
Exactly. You're it. In the lingo. Yeah. Yeah, I do think it's been an incredibly long time mm-hmm. since Grass and J-Lo have met, have been in the same location. I did not watch the movie, but I watched a lot of TikTok recaps of the movie. Well, so I've seen a lot of like stuff at the Heart Factory where she's dancing at the Heart Factory, the moment with the four husbands. Yeah. And the vibe that I got was that people were like, I mean, this is an insane movie about nothing, but it's kind of funny to do. Like, it's camp.
I thought it was pretty camp. I didn't think it was the worst thing ever made.
Yeah.
I just like, she just thought she was being so deep and it was so literal. And it was like, she wanted to have like a movie with dialogue about her life, but then also wanted it to be a music. And if it was like either or, but she tried to do both, and that's kind of where I think it failed.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the backlash.
Okay.
Needless to say, this project flopped. The internet spent a lot of time making fun of her, and there were a few different criticisms. And a lot of these criticisms were laid out by Danny DiPlacido in Forbes. Many TikTok commentators see Lopez as performative and insincere, accusing her of exaggerating her working class background as well as her connection to the Bronx. One clip of the doc that went viral sees J-Lo tasso her hair, like, so she has her hair like kind of like curly, quote mm-hmm. unquote, and she's reminiscing on her upbringing in the Bronx, and she says, I like taking my hair out like this. It reminds me of when I was 16 in the Bronx, running up and down the block, crazy little girl who used to fucking be wild, no dreams or no limits, all dreams. So of course that went viral. A lot of people thought that was a ridiculous audio, and the audio clip of that it turned into a trending sound, and like basically they used it for like if people's dogs like woke up and they had like really fucked up hair. I like to think I was it. Yes, it was really funny.
Oh my god, the way that like. The way that TikTok will take something dumb that you said and turn give it life.
It's insane.
Like, it's I'm frightened
yeah.
to one day have. What?
No, I feel like what do you mean? I cannot wait for that to happen.
All right, like, guys. Your lips to God's ears, Angelo. It's going to happen.
No, it will happen. Of course it will. But I'm just saying it's a good thing because people have fun with it. And they do start a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't have recorded the podcast if it hadn't been
we're gonna keep going, guys.
Okay.
Another criticism is from people who live in the Bronx saying J-Lo has never contributed, or like they're calling her out because of her lack of contribution to the and connection to the neighborhood. One TikTok creator, Photos by Angela, posted a video where he bluntly accuses J-Lo of lying and using the residents of the Bronx to look human. Another girl said, we both attended an all-girls high school in an Irish-Italian neighborhood, so you weren't running up and down the block, she says. In the same vein, I've seen people accuse her of never holding a fundraiser for the Bronx or giving back to the community, in which she's taken a lot. Another clip blew up from the Vogue interview.
I think I know which clip we're about to talk about.
Exactly, in which Lopez reveals her go-to bodega order. Ham and cheese on a roll, a bag of chips, and, quote, an orange drink. Referencing the drink, Lopez coyly adds, if you know, you know.
That's my favorite part. An orange drink, if you know, you know. And like, what are you
talking about? Tropicana.
Like. No, yeah. Commenters didn't know, and that led to a lot of jokes. They didn't know what the fuck she was talking about. It could be like a Sunny Delight. It could be Tang. Lopez was perceived to be too rich, too out of touch, and trying too hard, a common perception of many celebrities today. The internet is always happy to have a laugh at the rich and famous, and the internet has now taken to calling J-Lo J-Lulu, which is a cross between J-Lo and DeLulu, which is internet speak for delusional.
J-Lulu.
Shortly after, so this is the impact, shortly after the release, J-Lo announced a tour for her album, and people were not rushing to buy J-Lo's first album in 10 years. This is me now. People did not buy the album or buy seats for her North American concert tour this summer. The album peaked at 38 on the Billboard 200 album chart in February, and then it disappeared. Mm. But so far, the concert is facing weak ticket sales, which forced J-Lo to cancel 7 dates and to rebrand the tour to apparently broaden its scope, changing it from This Is Me Now to This Is Me Live, The Greatest Hits.
It's hard to sell. I mean, first of all, right now you are competing with some pretty heavy hitters when it comes to, like, touring musicians. Like, Eras is coming back. Beyonce is going to tour Cowboy Carter soon.
Yeah.
We have that coming. Olivia Rodrigo is on tour.
I know. I was
Not only that, it's probably not the same demographic, but, like, I mean, how many other Latino artists are, like, touring? Because
everyone is, you're right, too, is, like, there are big pop stars. Yeah. There are big Latin stars, because right now, that's kind of the only way.
Isn't Bad Bunny on tour right now? I feel like I just saw people going.
And it's way more likely to have, like, same fans. Well,
yeah.
A little bit. No, older women, too. And a big criticism about her concert tickets were that they were really pricey. I saw something online that was like, to meet Beyonce VIP was like $3,000, which is already insane. But J-Lo had some fucking prices for VIP for $7,000. So people are like, whatever.
Yeah, it's just like people who are into pop music, some of them might be saving money for either the Return of Eras or this potential next Beyonce tour, whenever that is announced. And then also you have Latin artists that have current hit music that is popular. Yeah. They're going out. So
Karol G.
Yeah.
Karol G would be one. Probably.
Yeah. So to have like that. To be trying to do a tour that's new music that also flopped.
Yeah.
And your ticket prices are at peak prices. It's like, you're going to need to be doing some of those hits, girl.
Yeah, and it's just like right now touring is the only way that artists make money too. So it's not just that you have big pop. It's just like you can see everybody. Like you can see anybody, you know what I mean?
I was going to say that though. I do feel like sure it's funny that's happening to her, but you also kind of because of everything you're saying that she doesn't allegedly. I don't want, because maybe we could be hosting SNL one night and she's going to be the musical guest.
Like, well,
so I'm just going to say allegedly now.
Yeah,
so,
you never know when any one of us will be forced to apologize to J-Lo for this episode.
Well, and by then I'll be rich enough to eat my words. But now I'm not, so keep going, Angela.
So what I'm saying is, I don't know, if her crew and all of her team are Latinos, she's not the only one affected. And I'm actually, sad by it. Because it's a lot of people losing jobs. That's what, honestly, I know.
Angela's such a sweetheart.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, I know that people just want, the fire and everything else. But it's like, no, it's like a lot of, she's not going to hit as whoever's, running the actual operation. Yeah. Producers, catering, anything. If she does have mostly Latino crew, that would be something that,
But I feel like that also comes back to the J. Lulu of it all, where it's like if you brought yourself down to earth just a little bit, saw how some of this stuff was performing, and configured a tour or a live show around the fact that, it seems like really just your, biggest stans are into this. This isn't, something that's bringing a resurgence of your music around. Then maybe she wouldn't have had to cancel 7 dates and all that stuff. Maybe if she was just okay.
Yeah, maybe it was supposed to happen that way.
Maybe if she was just okay, I'm going to do dates in these big cities where we know this popped off. Or some kind of a residency. I don't know.
Yeah, Vegas J-Lo would be great for a residency, actually. Yeah. I told you, I went to Usher and the thing is, Usher did his residency for 2 years and then did the Super Bowl, and now is going on tour.
And you know, he knew you saw him, and that's why he took the Super Bowl gig.
Yeah.
That's... No, but it's just also just like building momentum and getting people excited about his music again.
Yeah.
As he's working, you know what I mean? And it's just like, but J-Lo would be a great residency artist because I feel like Vegas is the perfect place to like have something to do. I don't know. Yeah. I think the residency experience is really great. And it has that intimate thing and like people can come seek you out and whatever, but yeah.
And you can build hype around the show itself where it's like, cause I feel like Britney Spears did such a good job with that where it's like her Vegas residency, people are like, she's out here fucking dancing and going
exactly.
Nuts.
And that's and what like, I mean about J-Lo. If she had a fucking, if she did the Super Bowl kind of performance 3 nights a week, 4 nights a week in Vegas for a year and then came, you know, then did a tour. Okay. Like.
Yeah, now I think. Talking.
Well, also, but Britney uses her own social media platform. And people know.
But like, Britney's not deluded. Britney's not trying to release. She's not paying $20 million to make a doc. Well, yeah. People are paying her now.
Yeah, and like the Vegas residency was before she had access to her social.
Yeah, she wasn't. She didn't have access to her social.
That wasn't her.
She wasn't allowed back then?
No, that wasn't her. Angela, we've got some documentaries.
Angela, we have like 5
I don't know. I'm just in terms of time, I don't know. Okay. There's a lot to know about.
There is a lot to know.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths but have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Audible's best of 2024 picks are here. Discover the year's top audiobooks, podcasts, and originals in all your favorite genres. From memoirs and sci-fi to mysteries and thrillers, Audible's curated list in every category is the best way to hear 2024's best in audio entertainment. Like a stunning new full cast production of George Orwell's 1984. Heartfelt memoirs like Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's Lovely One. The year's best fiction like The Women by Kristen Hannah. And Percival Everett's brilliantly subversive James. Audible. There's more to imagine when you listen. Go to audible.com/imagine and discover all the year's best waiting for you.
You've got mail. So let's talk about backlash to the backlash. The discourse was in all jokes and memes. Several content creators claimed to have copyright strikes on their TikTok accounts in response to their critical commentary on the greatest love story never told. The movie was the move, like to copyright strike people who were criticizing J-Lo's documentary was viewed as a low blow from J-Lo's team. TikTok creator Quint Roper Servant said that he received a copyright strike in response to a critical review of J-Lo's documentary, and the video that he got a copyright strike had amassed millions of views before it was flagged, and according to Quint, was fair commentary, quote, intended to satirize the overwhelming narcissism I was witnessing. We should be able to share our views about content we're constantly exposed to without being penalized, he said. It's time to question the celebrities being pushed on us and advocate for a culture that values open dialogue. But the most important aspect of this is the story of Kyle Marissa, who's known for doing celebrity blind items. TikTok creator Kyle Marissa said that her account had received copyright strikes on every single video that contained footage from The Greatest Love Story Never Told. As a result, her account was permanently banned. Quote, J-Lo's narcissism single-handedly crushed the main portion of my small business, Kyle Marissa said. I didn't even have the opportunity to download or save 4 years worth of my content that had been viewed over 1 billion times and accumulated over 50 million likes. Kyle Marissa created a new account, but lamented 4 years of hard work that was put into building her sizable TikTok following of almost 700,000, having lost hundreds of thousands of followers from the ban. So let's watch a clip of Kyle.
You want more? I'll give you more. So you know how in recovery, they say the first step to recovery is admitting you have a problem. I have a problem, and that is that J-Lo copyright claimed all of us, myself included, got my account banned. I think that was it, because she didn't like the fact that we were using clips from her narcissistic venture, her cosplay of an Eras Tour film. I don't know what the fuck that is, to point out all of the lies and narcissistic attributes that, you know, she has. So a lot of your favorite creators might be gone because of that. So since I now am in recovery, since I've admitted that's the problem, I need to heal, and I'm going to heal by using blind items to expose what a narcissistic POS JLo is. How about this? So this is going to be an abbreviated deep dive, just enough blind items so we get a real idea of what JLo was like then, because this is her now. So we're going to start in 1998.
This creator goes into, like,
yeah,
blind items, which are like anonymous tips about times she was really...
And that's what Kyle Marissa... I used to watch all of her videos and stuff. And that, like, little thing at the beginning, like, you want more, I'll give you more, was kind of her tagline for all of her videos.
Was
and
it mostly about J-Lo or
no.
just anything
No,
else?
It would be about any Anybody. Celebrity. It was celebrity blind items, basically. Okay. So she would read them and, like, talk about them, basically.
Yeah, and, like... She has a pretty incendiary, like, portfolio where she's talked a lot of shit about people and, like, hasn't been whatever. But, yeah, like, that's kind of her beat.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's almost, it's a lot of what Dumois does, but, like, she puts her fucking face to exactly. it. Like, she's saying it with her whole chest, and yeah. she would read these blind items and link them and gave commentary on them. It was a very interesting account. I definitely followed it. It was served to me from TikTok, and I followed it from there.
Do you think, like, she actually needed, because she says she's in recovery now, right?
Well, we'll talk about that, but any thoughts about that?
I'm waiting for you to drop it.
Okay, well, in the backlash to the backlash to the backlash, the final part of the story is in the Forbes article by Danny de Palacido. Kyle said that because of the permanent ban of her account, her earning potential has been severely impacted, estimating that JLo, quote, has cost me more than four figures of my income just for March 2024, which affects her ability to access necessary medical care. What people didn't know is that as she rose in followers, she was battling cancer. And in one of her posts, on her new account, she said, "If I die, it's because of JLo, because I can't pay for my colon cancer treatments because my account is banned." And a week later, after that post on April 16th, it was announced that Kyle passed away after fighting her battle with cancer. Because of that, many people have been putting the blame of Kyle's death on JLo and her team, saying it's her fault, and they've been flooding JLo's post or just unfollowing her in general. And you can see, and they're saying, like, oh, Kyle's ghost is haunting her, because JLo has nearly 23 million followers, but her photos are only getting like 500 likes on Instagram. People say that's the ghost of Kyle. So now that you've heard the evidence, do you think JLo is allegedly responsible of the death of Kyle?
Who wants to go first? Angela.
I think you should go first. So if anything, I'm just going to agree with you and then blame it on you or whatever that to us.
I do not think that JLo is responsible for the passing of this person. I also want to say, like, I think it's really sad. I really did follow her account. My heart goes out to her family and all of this. I think it is certainly damning and not good for JLo to have done all of this, have a video where this person who then passed away says, if I pass away, it is because of JLo. Like, that's not good. But to me, what more of this is about is something that we talk about on the pod all the time, which is that these platforms like TikTok, Instagram, whatever, they have no responsibilities to shutting down people's businesses, to banning people's accounts. Again, like, she said she didn't even get the opportunity to download her work. Like, I just think it comes back to this question we have all the time of, when is society going to catch up to the fact that social media is a small business for a lot of people. And for a celebrity to just be able to copyright strike you, because it seems like she was just copyright striking anybody.
Everybody. Yeah.
So for like a celebrity to be able to copyright strike stuff that kind of should be fair use because people are giving commentary, for TikTok to be able to just be like, your account's shut down, for Congress to be able to be like, actually, TikTok's banned. It's like none of this is taking into account the fact that these are people's fucking businesses. This was her business. Her account was her business. It was how she paid for her health insurance. And we don't know one to one what happened, but like, you can ruin someone's life by just pulling the plug on their small business out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
I think it's just also people, but it's like, how are we measuring that? Like, I don't know. I don't think people know as much as you do. It's like, there are people you know that probably think social media is just like stupid.
Yeah.
Like, there are people we know our age. Yeah. And so it's also hard. Because we don't have people on our side. It's harder to convince people of how important this is when you have people on yours like that just look like us, like are our age, that don't get it either. And they don't support it because they have real jobs.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why they're so condescending with it. And it's also, I feel like it's simpler for us because we're within the conversation and we have things running, like our lives and our jobs.
Yeah, of course.
But people don't, like, I have friends that are like engineers. They don't know. Like, they say this as a joke, you know, so they haven't really.
Well, I mean, this is the purpose of this podcast, to really educate people on, like, this is what it is, you know?
Yep.
Engineers still go on social media and they love sharing funny videos. Everyone loves funny videos. Everyone loves this and that. Everyone loves to be entertained. Everyone likes movies. Everyone likes TV. And right now, social media is a way, unless you have like 10 like old white guys that like you in Hollywood, you're not going to get shit done without social media now in today's industry. And it's like, unfortunately, 10 old white guys run the fucking accounts. Listen to what Marsha said last week about the social media. Facebook Supreme Court decided whether or not her account should be banned. And like, these are the things that we're talking about. Social media is people's jobs, and it is like fucked up, and this is how people make a living. But it's also, as a creator, someone who's like, I have to own all my shit. I have to save everything, because when you post it out there, you don't own it, and these people can decide. Which I remember in January 2022, remember, for a month my Instagram was just taken down for no reason, for a whole month, and it completely fucked. Like, I couldn't promote any shows, I couldn't do anything for 1 month, and like, that sounds so stupid, right? Because people like, oh, take a break, but it really impacted a lot of my things, and people who follow me thought I blocked them and all this stuff. And it's just like,
and if you had like a serious show, like your solo show or something that was supposed to go up at that time, like that would destroy your ability to get news word out of, for your, if you're going on tour and then suddenly they shut down your Instagram. And the crazy thing with like Instagram, and I think TikTok is the same, is they don't have customer service that you can actually reach. Exactly. They have like a robot that you can maybe talk to. But everyone I know who has ever had an issue where their Instagram got shut down or like one of their accounts were taken away, they've had to like find someone who works at Instagram. At Meta, literally, like find someone who works there and get it finagled in like the through connections. And it's just like, these companies should have to operate with some level of responsibility over people's
to the
lives.
People who make their platforms what their platforms are.
Yeah, like especially because I imagine that Kyle and anyone else who has an account that's monetized like that, their account is probably like a creator account or a business account. So that should come with some, honestly, it should come with protections over like how we would ban your account, how that would work.
Even if you get charged.
Happen. Yeah,
I think
exactly.
It would even make sense like to be charged certain amount of money, not like, you know, because you are using the platform, but to be protected by it.
I saw literally I got targeted like an ad for an insurance company where you pay $10 a month or something, but they're your Instagram insurance. And basically all they do is make sure they're like a customer service rep and make sure none of your shit gets banned. And if it gets, if you have a trouble with them, then you have some, they have a direct line to Facebook. But like, that's a third party service that's charging this shit. That's instead crazy. Of, it's crazy, but yeah. It's like, how many people would fucking pay for that? So, and also, I'll just say this, because this is a pro-worker podcast, mm-hmm. is that, of course, I understand it looks bad for J-Lo, but I'm also like, if you're blaming J-Lo, you might as well blame every politician that has been for, against universal healthcare, because if you fucking piss off a celebrity for a month or a week or something, or your TikTok gets banned, you shouldn't die.
Yeah, like, you yeah. should.
That's ridiculous.
Again, like, everyone should just have access to health insurance regardless for sure. of whether or not their TikTok is banned. Like, the fact that someone could have their TikTok banned and that results in them losing health insurance when they're in the middle of cancer treatment, like, there are so many bigger structural issues
exactly.
That go into that than Jennifer Lopez's, like, legal team.
The sad thing about it is, like, they can put a name on, like, J-Lo. Like, they know who J-Lo is. They don't know who the politicians are. Well, and so they need to hate someone.
Well,
and they're going to choose the woman who came out with This Is Me Now.
Yeah.
And Dunkin' Donuts.
And the person who's already kind of in a meme yeah. bad
yeah. It's easier
state.
To hate them.
Yeah. It's easier to hate them. It's harder to figure out who the fuck your politician and all this stuff and advocate for, of course. But
and
that
follow
is
this TikTok ban and all this stuff yeah. and like yeah. all this different shit. And like, we are disenfranchised from a lot of that in this country. So it is in many ways easier to leave a negative comment to J-Lo than it is to like advocate for universal health insurance.
Well,
So who is to blame?
Well, you guys are saying it's not J-Lo, and I kind of agree. I just think it's funny. Like, it was just a really big topic.
I know.
This week.
Has she said anything?
I haven't seen
she
anything.
Never will. I don't think J-Lo responds to that kind of.
I mean, she should.
I mean, she, when J-Lo was J-Lo. Asked what her skincare secret was, she said olive oil. I'm like, girl, she's J-Lulu. She's not
J-Lulu. But I, you know, but the thing is, the team is J-Lulu too.
Yeah,
and that's what I've heard, and that's what we'll say about that.
But yeah,
she's been big for too long. I think
yeah,
that's what it
like,
is.
That's a whole
who's,
thing. Like,
who's a good? And I'm gonna ask you because I wouldn't know who's like a good artist like from her generation.
From her generation,
that is actually like down to earth. Is there anyone
that
you
level,
think of like you can be like, oh, this person like connects to their community or
like for me, somebody who like of her generation, because that's what the thing to me, I'm like Paula Abdul. She loves like adopting dogs. She's obsessed with like adopting dogs.
She
does
big?
A lot of shit, huh?
Was she ever as big?
She was big in the 80s. She's always like, she's not
I
as big, but you're saying
yeah.
generation.
Yeah,
sure. But I mean,
but I'm
like
saying like that's somebody who is bigger earlier, has a following, but also ties back to the community and is doing shit now. Big as J-Lo, that's still like down to earth. That's tough. Cause I'm just like, I'm
it's
also
tough.
Like Bad Bunny is somebody who I think that's a great artist who like does things for Puerto
yeah,
Rico,
of course.
Does things for his community.
For Latinos in general.
For Latinos
yeah.
in general, like brings a light to all the issues and stuff like that. And like,
but it's also generational wise. Like
he
was just like he was a clerk like 6 years ago. So he's
yeah.
yeah.
He was, you know, like he hasn't been big for that long. And
yeah.
also it was people, the one that brought him to, you know, he came out of like SoundCloud and stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's like, he knows people were the ones, whereas I don't think J-Lo.
It's also cooler now for artists to take a stand and mm-hmm. be politically active, which I think in the 90s, like obviously there were artists that were doing that, but then it was like, that's going to be your whole like
thing.
You yeah. are a political artist if you make any political statement mm-hmm. of any kind. And now I do think that you can be a gen pop artist that also people know what your politics are and you have a cause that is like Olivia Rodrigo is talking about Roe on tour
and
like
talking about abortion and
yeah
and
giving out birth control and stuff like that. So it's like I do think I feel like if J-Lo had come out the gate with like,
well, she hasn't done any.
No, like, but yeah. She hasn't done. But also, yeah, for her to be like, I'm Jenny from the block, I'm from the Bronx, blah, 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 and not do like a fucking fundraiser for a school or something. Yeah,
that's like, what bothers me.
And, I mean, that's what bothers everybody.
And not only, but there's just one thing I would add is, I think she followed what she was told for too long. Mm. Whereas, like, if Olivia Rodrigo were, I don't know, if she was told to do or to say something, right, by their producers, she can come out, like, on TikTok and say, I'm being told to do this, can you believe this, blah, 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 and everyone's going to be with her and support her. I don't think artists before had that. They were, like, kidnapped for a long time. Yeah. And look at, you were just talking about Britney, and I think... I mean, I'm not a fan of J-Lo. I've always heard like stuff about that, like, you know, from her. There's that famous clip of her saying hi to people in the Bronx and people not knowing who she was because she never goes there. And I get it. But she's also a woman. And like, how many times did she have to follow, you know, like what she was told? Yeah, I don't know. I do want to think like she was like that for too long.
Yeah.
And it's almost impossible for somebody to become...
Rewired.
You know, like...
Look at Angelo being nuanced and fair.
Well, you know, I'm your neighbor. I have no choice.
Well, again, he's covering his tracks for when he hosts SNL. And they play, and TMZ pulls the clip of him saying, I'm not a fan of J-Lo. TMZ. And then we have to...
It's not going
to
be TMZ. It's going to be like Telemundo.
Yeah, exactly.
Primer impacto.
Yeah, just some random Latin TikToker with like
Gordo
a
Shade Room. Yeah,
like Shade Room Latino.
Yeah.
Okay, really quickly, we have... Speaking to your senators and politics, we have our next segment, which is Polititiktok.
Polititiktok.
Where we talk about how the internet and politics intersect. Recently, I don't know if you've heard this, the city of Detroit put up a new sign on the side of I-94 as a welcome to visitors entering the city ahead of the upcoming NFL draft. The rendering shows big block letters that are supposed to be inspired by the Hollywood, California sign, like this.
Mm-hmm.
What they got was this sign. Tell me what the difference is, what you see between the two signs.
I mean, you know, it's what you get when you order in Wish.
Oh, really? That's what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
That's what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm going to stand by it.
Okay, you're going to stand by Wish. Elise, what do you say?
I would say that, like, the original rendering is this giant, grand, big sign that would welcome you to the city. And what they actually got is, like, a haphazard. It looks like it could be the entrance to, like, a rest stop.
Yes.
That says Detroit. It is not.
And what, yeah, what are the coloring, the font?
So the big, the original rendering is like kind of this big grand, almost looks like white, even like, not marble, but like it would be like the Hollywood letters, like striking. And then this is like, it's in a light blue and the font is so spread out that it's kind of hard to read.
It doesn't look like one word. It looks like every letter is doing their own thing. It looks like an acronym.
Yeah, exactly. It does look like an acronym the way the letters are spaced out.
Well, guys, people are upset with this. And usually when people are upset with things, they write to their government representatives, go to a community board meeting, or make a petition. But if you're Detroit-based rapper G-Mac Cash, you make a diss track about the sign. Let's listen to the diss track.
Amazing.
That's amazing. I know you fucking lying. It looks like they got these fucking letters from Toys R Us, bro. That Detroit sign looking fightable. Detroit. One thing I'ma do, I'ma state the fact. This ain't the sign that we ordered, you can take it back. Here we go, thinking we about to get some shit. Now they done order us a sign off fucking man. Wish.
Oh my god! Not gonna see this shit when you on the plane. Real. All I wanna know how much we pay for this. How much? Real talk, man. Shit, I could have made this shit. I thought our sign was gonna look like Hollywood. No. That's probably why they put this bitch right by the hood. Bitch. Thought we was about to get some shit. They really.
Okay, I don't wanna like.
I told you.
Yeah, that's what you said.
I
wish.
I forgot to tell you I was a rapper too.
When you said wish, I was like, oh my god, that's so funny.
That I love. Doing a diss track about a sign. That is so fucking good. And the fact that he's like, I'm going to keep it real. This looks like shit.
That's just straight up.
That is so funny.
Yes. They just two more lyrics that we didn't get to. It was, thought I was about to get some shit. They really just hoed us. They gave us a sign in New Times New Roman.
Wow.
And then I'm just keeping it real. We ain't never hating. I think I seen a bigger sign at a graduation. So
that is so funny.
Is it doing well?
Well, it racked over 8.6 million plays on TikTok and received coverage in Complex, Vulture, and more. It has 155,000 views on YouTube.
Wow.
The mayor has responded.
J-Lo should have him as an opener.
Well,
see if that
I
helps.
Know, right?
I fucking see that. Mayor Mike Duncan blamed unrealistic expectations on an AI-generated image that heavily circulated when the project was announced. The Detroit sign is a testament to Detroit's growth over the last 10 years, read a post on the city's official Instagram. No, it hasn't been perfect, but it's been a decade of resilience. Tough
it
conversation.
It took a decade to make that sign?
No, basically they're saying, like, Detroit's struggling and our sign is an emblem of it.
Okay, I was like, wait, this is the result of a decade of work?
Yeah, we're evolving, blah blah blah. So they listened and they installed lights around the letters.
Okay.
And G-Mac made another song called Detroit Sign 2, in which he addresses criticisms. He says he's still not happy with the sign, and he addresses criticisms. How you mad at me because I want better for the city, and I ain't the person to just take what anyone give me. Now the sign's a rating 5 out of 10. And saying that the Uniroyal Tiger sign along I-49 or 149 looks better. Later in the song, he says, I'm talking about the sign. Now they call me a hater. I put on my city. I put on for the city. I'm probably running for mayor.
So, honestly, you should run for mayor with that.
You should. Definitely should.
I feel like putting lights behind it probably helps. If I were to give them notes, I would say they need to put a backdrop or something.
Yeah.
Because right now the letters are fading.
They're too far apart.
They're too far apart and the coloring is off. But if they put a backdrop behind it,
like,
and lit
backdrop
it up, we might be able to save the Detroit sign.
But it seems like the way for you to give them notes would be to make a song too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I need to make my song.
I think you need to make a song too.
I've been to Detroit once for PotterCon.
Oh my God.
That's a different, that's a whole other story.
Is that where the girl said the N-word at Harry
Yes,
Potter
that is. That is the time that I was hosting the sorting ceremony at PotterCon in Detroit, and a white girl said the N-word while I was hosting the sorting ceremony. Which
what
is,
did you do?
I said,
she made
I said Slytherin, and sent her kind of off the stage. And then I had to make an impromptu speech that I never thought I would have to make, where I was like, hey, don't say the N-word at PotterCon. Hey, guys.
Not here at PotterCon,
yeah,
pretty much.
I'm just responsible for you here. My true life advice would be not to say it, but definitely while I'm up here sorting, pretending to be the sorting hat from the children's series Harry Potter, I would love if nobody else kind of said that.
I can't believe Warner Brothers struck you guys.
Yeah, Warner Brothers did stop PotterCon. We were on an unauthorized festival, and unauthorized behavior did start to occur.
Okay,
so.
Well.
Yeah, well, it seems like it did.
Yeah, I think that was honestly the last big one I did, and I was like, oh, thank God. I was like, this went to a place I never thought it would go.
Speaking of a place you never thought it would go.
Okay, it's time for our final segment. Angelo, our final segment is called Grasshole of the Week. That is where we declare the person this week who needs to log off, touch grass the most. When I knew that I was on Grasshole this week, Millie and I were talking. We were talking last Thursday, and I said, the Grasshole hasn't come to me yet, but Taylor Swift releases a new album tomorrow, and I'm sure they will reveal themselves.
Yeah.
So that is what occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Our Grasshole, before I say exactly who it is, I'm going to give you guys a little bit of the stats.
Yeah.
So on Friday, Taylor Swift released her 11th studio album, The Tortured Poets Department. It was a surprise 2-hour-long, 31-track double album. Response to the album, as far as reviews go, has been more mixed than normal for Taylor Swift's recent projects. So Pitchfork gave Part 1 a 6.6, and part two a 6.0 rating.
Out of 10.
That's low for Taylor, but not like a panned album. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So like mm-hmm. Reputation, which is her previously most like critically mixed album, got a 6.5. Peppa Pig's Peppa's Adventure, the album, also got a 6.5.
Well,
so part one got 6.6. So it is a little bit better than Peppa Pig's Peppa's Adventure, the album, according to Pitchfork. Part one. Part two is not as good as Peppa Pig's Peppa's Peppa's the Adventure. Moment.
She's the god.
They do
She's
share demographics.
Cowboy Carter got an 8.4. Midnight's got a 7. Folklore got an 8. 1989's Pre-Record got a 7x7. So, like, it is low, if we're going in Pitchfork terms, for Taylor.
7x7? That's low. It should be a 9.
For
1989?
1989?
I think the re-record got a 7.7. I'm not sure what the original 1989 got. Scooter's maybe got version? Higher. Yeah, Scooter's version. Which I do prefer Scooter's version. I don't know what it is, but there's some magic in there that I don't think made it to the re-record. I know. Cut it out. I'm immediately killed.
We're gonna.
I'm taken out. But, you know, so again, it's like mixed. Rolling Stone called it an instant classic. The Times in the UK gave it 5 stars, but also like Paste Magazine called it a strikeout. NME called it a rare misstep. So when I was thinking about who was going to beat Grasshole, there was a period of time where I was like, I'm going to do a dual Grasshole of both the Swifties and the vehement anti-Swifties mm-hmm. because reactions have been overwrought on both sides, I think, yeah. of this. But I ultimately decided not to do that because it would have involved reading a lot of tweets by what I think are 13-year-old girls.
Yeah.
And
we said there should be an age warning on Twitter.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, like, we punch up here.
Yeah.
So that is why I am declaring our Grasshole Miss Taylor Allison Swift herself.
Wow.
And this is for two reasons.
Okay.
Two songs on the album, which I have listened to now 3 times.
Jesus
Reminder Christ. Is 2 hours long.
You do
I
not
am
have
a Swiftie.
To tell people. Oh, wow. Yeah. Elise is a Swiftie.
I'm a Swiftie, but I'm not a stan. Okay. I would say like fan, but not stan.
No, we know. You just said you'd prefer Scooter's version.
I know. Exactly. It's like
that. Yeah, you would never say that. Yeah. But you are going to Warsaw, Poland to see Taylor right. Swift.
So before she I get into in the full Grasshole of it all, I was going to ask your guys where you stand in Swift, the Swift verse.
I would say that I'm like I like some of her songs. I've sung them in karaoke. Blank Space and We're mm-hmm. Never Getting Back Together.
We did that together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we what?
Yeah. We were driving from.
Oh yeah. We sung Black Space together. Yes.
Blank Space, but I do like the idea of Black Space.
Black Space.
Taylor Swift's Black Space.
I think she has some fun songs. I'm not a Swiftie, mm-hmm. but yeah.
I'm not I'm probably like I'm not a Swiftie, but for a Latino Venezuelan immigrant, I am because I know over 15 songs.
Okay,
so
that
already within my friends, I am.
Yeah, within your range,
I just gotta be.
Yeah, you are the Swiftie.
Yeah, I like her. And people seem happy when they go to their concerts, and so yeah. I don't know.
So okay, great. That's a great place for us to kind of begin the conversation. So I'm giving her Grasshole of the Week for two songs on the album in particular that I actually think are two of the better like songs. Mm-hmm. But the reaction that they made me feel when I found out the lore behind them and got deep into the meaning, because as we all know, Taylor Swift has Easter eggs hidden throughout all of her songs and everything's about something. My reaction was, go touch grass, log off. Mm-hmm. But Taylor, log off. One of them is a loving log off, like what we've given to Selena Gomez in the past. Mm-hmm. And one of them is a more heavy dose of side eye log off. I'll let you guys choose which one we talk about first. Side eye or loving?
Let's do loving. Or so what are you saying?
Give me an example of what you said. You did that to Selena Gomez, which means
like means that we want her to log off for like we sympathize. Mm-hmm. We want her to log off for her own good because we love her.
Okay.
And the other one's like, girl, get the fuck off. Yeah. Like, you're
ridiculous. Right.
Yeah. So which one do you want to hear first, Angelo?
I wanna hear the side eye.
Okay.
Well, we'll go with our guest choice.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to first talk about the track, But Daddy, I Love Him. But Daddy, I Love Him is It is a bop. It's a good song, in my opinion. But it is Taylor's response to the internet's response to her dating Maddie Healy. So it's basically her coming for her fans. And as a reminder, Maddie Healy is the frontman of a band, the 1975. Taylor dated him for basically a couple of months after the breakup with Joe Alwyn. And people were really not into this relationship because Maddie Healy has made racist comments about Ice Spice on the Adam Freeland show, which is a whole other
discourse. And we may never unpin that.
And he genuinely has like that edgelordy sense of humor where it's like he says racist stuff, but with a wink. And he's like, well, I'm not really being racist. I'm making fun of racism. And it's like,
is that how the girl said the N-word at the PotterCon?
The girl said the N-word at PotterCon.
The girl that said the N-word at PotterCon seems like she maybe seems slept like with black people.
The girl who said the N-word at PotterCon said it because, like, in the way of like people who say it in a song. Like, yeah. I think she was confused. Oh, okay.
Where Maddie Healy will say something like,
Did you
racist.
Change her voice while doing it?
Stop, no. Angela.
Okay, listen. We will pause for 1 second, and I will tell the story of the girl who said the N-word at PotterCon. Basically, she came on stage. She had a fan-made T-shirt on. I'm in front of fully 300 people. Me and this other guy are sorting. I'm doing my banter with her. I see that she has a fan-made shirt, but the lights are really bright. I can't tell what the shirt says. I say, what does your shirt say? She says, I'll tell you, but don't be mad. I don't think that that could possibly mean that it says the N-word. So I say, no, come on, tell me. And then she says that the shirt says, free my N-word, Sirius Black, being Harry Potter's uncle, who was unfairly imprisoned in Azkaban prison for 11 years. So then I
told you to not ask, Angelo.
No.
And at that point, I declared that she was in Slytherin, and I got her off stage, and I told the security guard to make her go to Diagon Alley and get a new shirt, and then I had to make a weird announcement.
Not only did she say it, she was wearing it, too.
She was wearing it, and
you're missing that. That's like, that's even worse.
No, I've heard it.
It was
starred out
on the shirt.
Some people are deaf, at least. They read it, too.
It was starred out on the shirt, so she knew not to write it.
Yeah.
But she still said into the mic. Anyway,
she could have just said free Sir. Anyway, no. Yeah. Okay. So Maddie Healy's, but Maddie Healy's racist in a different way where he actually will say, like he said that Ice Spice looks like an Inuit. Like,
he made really gross comments about Ice Spice. And that's kind of also his thing in general is that thing that
is he
like,
from England?
He used to make out with fans. Do you remember those viral videos of like, like he would make out with fans in the front row of his concerts?
He's just like a sleazy guy, and he gives sleazy guy, and that's kind of what everyone was saying.
He smells like cigarettes and dick cheese.
He looks like a cigarette.
Yeah,
he looks like a half smoked cigarette that got water on it.
Yeah,
like that's what I have to say about Maddie Healy. But in this song,
totally
Taylor's,
not your type of guy either.
Well, there was a time.
It's closer to my type.
There was a time.
There was a time in my life for the Maddie Healy.
Well, that's probably
world.
Where she was at.
Well,
same time.
No, it was.
Yes. Yeah, and like, I do think that that's like, honestly, what a lot of Torture Poets Department is about is like, oh, I kind of let myself get wrapped up in this like weird early 20s revamp love of like where I'm dating a stupid dude and we're smoking and like doing a lot of drugs together and having fake profound thoughts that are actually really dumb. Like, I think that's kind of what a lot of the album is about. But the thing that is interesting to me about this song is that basically her message to her fans, who she refers to as Sarah's and Hannah's and wine moms, which I'm like,
well,
I'll
that's
read.
Pretty that's pretty
accurate.
Like,
she knows,
like,
she knows what
she knows who they are. But her message to them is basically like, fuck you, don't tell me what to do. So some lyrics are, I'll tell you something right now, I'd rather burn my whole life down than listen to one more second of all this bitching and moaning. I'll tell you something about my good name, it's mine alone to disgrace. I don't cater to all these vipers dressed in empath's clothing. So it's very interesting to me because I don't think Taylor Swift has ever come for the Swifties, her own fans, like this. She's come for the collective haters. She's come for critics, etc. But for this to be the first time she comes for her fans, and it's because of one, like, a valid criticism.
Yes.
And two, everyone was saying, like, hey, don't date this shitty guy. You just made a 2.5 hour long album about how he ghosted you and treated you really bad and was
and cheated on you in Orlando.
And, like, was shitty and, what, like, sucked. And maybe the fans who were making all these think pieces and saying stuff kind of spotted it from a mile away.
But also her fans heard the album and said, let's hear it twice again.
It's the three times.
That's so, and so I'm saying maybe it works.
I mean,
her.
I guess it is. Maybe it's like very much like a Donald Trump. I could shoot someone in the middle
in
of
the
Fifth
middle of
yeah. Yeah. Like she's like, I can make a fucking diss track about you, and you are gonna go online and still stand me. It's true.
It's true.
And you did.
It's true.
And
I would say I have a mixed review of Tortured Poets, though I do like it. I think.
And you did say those songs were.
Yeah, I do like this song. I
so
do
you're
like
not
song.
Only taking the criticism, you're dancing to it.
You're
so yet again,
but
the
Daddy,
Grasso,
I love him.
At least
good.
I think what we're trying to say is that you're the problem.
Guys, I was declared the Grasshole at our live show literally this week. If I end up being Grasshole again, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah, no, Elise literally was like overwhelmingly Grasshole over Club Chalamet.
Yeah,
which
it
is
said Elise
over Club Chalamet.
I was declared the Grasshole.
I'm so glad I understand
but
that. Okay, so
yes, you're gay.
So that is
understand.
The one that gets that is the one that gets the biggest side eye from me, where I'm like, for me, I feel like you can't be like, I'm going to respond to the internet criticism, I'm going to tell everyone to fuck themselves, but also I'm going to release an album where I'm like, actually, you remember that guy you said was really bad for me? He was, and he hurt me really bad. Like, just gives me, again, that feeling of like when someone's posting through it and they're like, I'm not owned, and it's like, you were a little bit owned.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's
you
giving,
were a little bit owned.
The best example is Meek Mill.
Yeah, like
Meek Mill tweeting 20 times a day that he's not gay.
It's just like the best response. Or if the song had woven into it something that's like, and it kind of turned out that you guys were right, there would be something different to it for
me. I'm just like, if I'm like, there's so, it's so easy for someone that famous and rich to never look at their phone.
I was like,
I'd be like drunk, vacation drunk.
Yeah,
I got vacation drunk the other day at the spa, but I'm like, oh man, like to be rich enough, you can just be vacation drunk. And
she
like,
does say
this.
She's a functional alcoholic on this album. So
well,
maybe
I mean,
she says that.
Yeah.
She's
in the first
honest.
Track.
Yeah,
like,
but I'm just
in.
Like, I'd be like on a beach fucking my like football boyfriend who's dumb as fuck and hot and like. Just,
so,
I'm not thinking about Dick Cheese cigarette guy over there. Like, oh, God.
So. This brings me to number
wealth
two.
Is wasted
the
on
loving, the
rich.
The loving Grasshole.
Okay.
Right.
There's another track on the album called Thank You, Amy. And what's important to know about this song is that the K, the I, and the M in Thank You, Amy are capitalized so that we all know Amy is really Kim. The song is about
Kim
Kardashian.
Kardashian,
okay? There are some pretty savage lines in it. The big one that gets a lot of play is, and one day your kid's going to come home singing a song that only us two know is about you. Basically being like, your kids are going to sing my songs and fuck you. Everyone knows my mother's a saintly woman, but she used to say she wished you were dead.
Oh, wow. She got her mom caught astray.
Well, she's saying that like her mom used to wish Kim Kardashian was dead.
I know. I'm like, damn.
All that time you were throwing punches, I was building something, and I can't forgive the way you made me feel. Screamed, fuck you, Amy, to the night sky as the blood was gushing. So here's the thing. The beef between Taylor, Kim, and Kanye. I mean, the Taylor and Kim is back to 2016 when Kim released the video of Taylor supposedly approving Kanye's line in Famous where he says, I made that bitch famous, but it doesn't include the fact that he then put a fake naked body of her in his music video.
I mean,
and
whatever.
Like all of the, it.
Sure.
Whatever.
But,
like,
yeah.
But Kim released that video, which kind of started the entire, a downslide in popularity for Taylor Swift, from which she has since, I would say, recovered.
She's super recovered in a way that I've never seen anybody.
Also, with that thank you, Amy, and the thing with the letters, makes you wonder, did Taylor Swift make the Detroit sign too?
Is Taylor Swift behind the Detroit sign?
Is she
sign?
Behind
That's an
all
excellent
of these?
Song.
Well, honestly,
did she
though,
write the song for that rapper too? We don't know.
No, I feel like the rapper is more direct. The rapper is gonna let you. G-Mac Cash is gonna say, "At Detroit sign, you suck." Taylor's gonna do all this subliminal messaging shit. Yeah. And if Taylor made, God help G-Mac Cash, if Taylor made the Detroit side, because he will have diss albums for the next 15 years about G-Mac Cash, and it's gonna be like Go to Sleep or something with G-O-G.
It's the thing is, like, part of what I like, I do enjoy about Taylor is that she has never gotten over anything that's ever happened to her. And I think like that you, rocks. Yeah. I too remember every mean thing anyone has ever said to me. I keep it written on my heart. I do feel like in this moment, when you are on top of the world, you have the number one tour. Your boyfriend has won the Super Bowl twice. You are now, I mean, the thing is, like, Tortured Poets Department, whether the reviews are mixed or not, it's breaking streaming records.
Which is why she made it that long anyway.
Fortnite is now, which is like the single with Post Malone, is the most streamed song in a single day in Spotify history. Like, I just feel like there's a certain point where you have to take your W, and like Taylor Swift is just constitutionally never able to do that. And it's like, sometimes I can get with it, but for this whole album to be about the end of this one relationship, this really intense emotional rebound that she had, and then just in the middle to be like, and also, fuck Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Is so, to me, I'm like, girl, let this sleeping dog lie. The Kardashians are also in their flop era themselves.
The Kardashians, like, if they were, are in the flop era. We should do a Patreon episode about
it. If they were at the top of their shit, it would be a different situation, but like, their businesses are fucking failing. I feel like their hold on the culture has never been less. Kanye is complete persona non grata in the entire music industry. Yeah,
his wife is like butt ass naked, like wearing a
His mesh fake shawl. School is, he's getting sued out. Like, it's like, you won this. As things stand right now, you couldn't be in a bigger place. So it does feel, even though you can't really punch down at the Kardashians, for her, I'm like, why do we it have a Kim, like, Kardashian song?
No, I feel like it seems like they need it. Like, they need to have these sort of
like celebrities? Downsides.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, she's doing too well. And actually, the first time, like, not long ago, I heard Bad Bunny. It was, like, last week. Mm-hmm. He doesn't do interviews as much. And he went to Alofoque, which is, like, the biggest Dominican radio show for, like, urban artists and stuff. And he was speaking about how he didn't feel the album, which is touring right now, but he's like respecting that he wrote that at the time where he was feeling that. And so the only thing I would say is that it must be annoying.
Because it was like a backlash to his more poppy Un Verano Sin Ti. And then this one is
that
like
one's,
anti.
The other one's like super happy, and this one's like what he would have been if he had like kept to only doing trap music.
Yeah.
And now he just feels like, yeah, maybe I wouldn't be doing it now, but I need to respect
the time.
And I feel like that's kind of like what's happening to her, like, because it's a lot more annoying for musicians, because songs, it's like they don't change. The show can, but the songs don't. And if she's not feeling one way, she still has to sing that. We're comedians. Like, when you don't feel a joke and you are doing it, like, you can tell. Like, you hate, like, the joke, and you can kind of like fits a little bit more, so it's like it resonates a little bit more to who you are now.
All the time.
You what?
I'll just drop jokes. I'm like, I'm not gonna do this today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you know what I mean. Like, if you're building an hour, like stuff like that.
That is kind of how I felt ultimately about Tortured Poets Department. Is that it felt like that Mean Girls girl of like, I just have a lot of feelings. The album, and that she's like, you know what? I've been touring. I've been doing all of these re-records. Here's everything I felt about these last two relationships in the last 2 years. I'm not going to edit it or take out the non-bops or do anything because I don't fucking have to, because I'm on top of the world. And here's the whole 2-hour saga if you want it.
And I do think a lot of artists say, like, this is how I felt at the time, so I'm going to keep it like that. I just do feel like Taylor, it just reminds me of like something that was difficult for me in her documentary, was that I just felt like it was so stupid, in that like real issues that she could have talked about were blown past. And like, literally, there was just one scene where, like, she was talking about the Kanye thing. And at this point, like, at that point when the documentary came out, it was, like, 2017, maybe.
Yeah.
And that thing happened in 2009. So, almost 10 years later, or maybe it was 2019, I think, that documentary. I don't know. Anyway, so her mom is playing with the golden retriever. And her mom turns to the camera and is like, oh, Taylor got me this golden retriever when I was battling breast cancer and I was really sick. And then she's like, yeah, mom, thanks. Anyway, Kanye was mean to me. And I'm like, I actually would have liked to see a documentary about how you and your mom overcame that or whatever. But it was just so focused on
Kanye. I do think, here's what I'll say, is that I do feel like Miss Americana was pivotal in, like, changing the conversation around that Kanye event, and, like, the narrative flipped after Miss Americana came out, and people were like, wait, that was actually fucked up, and what Kim did was not fucked up. Like, kind of before that, people had I think it sparked a conversation to think critically about that situation and, like, him taking the VMAs from her in a way that actually hadn't happened in the 10 years until Americana came out.
Oh, that, like, people were starting to...
She wasn't mature enough to address it the way, maybe?
It was that, like, it was coming off of this, like, reputation era thing where, like, her reputation dipped heavily, her public opinion dipped heavily, and I think it was kind of her version of, like, these Britney Spears are, like, Paris Hilton docs where they're like, actually that really famous thing that happened to me, like, this was fucked up and it screwed me up and it was like, not, I was treated badly by a guy on public television in this big massive way, and like, I was a little girl. She's like fucking 17 in that video.
I know, so. But to be I mean, again, and we'll wrap up soon, mm-hmm. but like, to be fair, Kanye was more addressing an institutional structural problem with black artists not being rewarded, and not, because basically he said Beyonce had the greatest video of all time because Single Ladies was the greatest video.
It would have been different if he had said a guy.
Exactly.
Like, if he had acknowledged a guy's video, then, but yeah, I guess, but there's a little bit more of, like, Beyonce, gray areas there.
There's a nuance there, because literally Beyonce has never won Album of the Year with the Grammys, and Taylor has won multiple times. So it's like, yes, that was a thing, but it's also like, in her, but I guess, and this is the overall criticism, is like, in her blindness and focus on her suffering, it is ignoring these bigger structural issues that affect people, whatever. And that is ultimately, like, a criticism that she may never get over. And that's who she is.
He also never apologized. It's not like he hurt by what he did, you know, like.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's with the Kanye Taylor thing. It's less about his point and more about his methodology of that moment from her as, like, a young girl.
But she literally bounced back 50 times already.
Well, and that's why I'm saying, like, to have this thank you. I get the Miss Americana of it all, but to be now in this moment when you're on top of the world, you're doing another song about Kim. It's like, that is where I feel like she's got to go.
She might just be Argentinian.
Let's not only, okay, so this podcast, in this episode, we offended the city of Detroit, J-Lo, her team, and
the Swifties.
I got Argentinian family. I'm not offending them. They're just particular in that sense of, like, there's a meme of a little girl on national TV. She wins something, a present. She goes, like, mira de quien te burlaste vos. She's, like, making fun of a kid in the school that was making fun of her, and she's like telling, like, in the moment,
so
where she wins,
are petty and
they kind
and
of do that, like, remember when you were making fun of me? Well, I'm winning now.
I mean,
well, maybe she is Argentinian.
She might be Argentinian
because she does kind of look like Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, she could be that version.
She could be Argentinian
by way of Germany.
Well, and Argentinians will claim her right away.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, so for those two songs, which I do think are good songs, but because of the lore, I say Taylor Allison Swift.
Go touch grass.
And that's the end of our episode today.
Say it in Spanish, Angelo.
Ve a tocar
grama.
Grama. Césped. No, grama.
Okay. Angelo.
Angelo, where can our listeners find you, follow you, see you on tour, all of those good things?
Just Angelo Colina everywhere because I have the handle in every other social media.
Wow. Yeah. A professional.
A professional.
I got a head on top. Very professional. Oh, thank you.
And guys, you can follow us at Go Touch Grass Pod on all of our social media because we're a professional podcast.
Yes.
You can follow me at Pandalise on Instagram and at Elise Navidad on TikTok because I am not professional. And also because Meta doesn't have fucking... You can't get in touch with them to say, I want to change my handle. And once you're verified, you can't change your handle.
Because Elise Navidad is pretty fucking solid.
It's the best handle. It should be. Anyway, whatever. That's where you can follow me. We'll have that conversation another time.
You can follow me at Millie_Tamaris because someone took Millie Tamaris and made a troll account. And I can't use that on Instagram and on TikTok. You can follow me at Millie Tamaris on Twitter. Yes, I'm still there. For some reason, because
I'm lurking. Elise is lurking. I'm just not posting as myself.
Mm-hmm. And just please join the Patreon.
Thank you. Join the
Grass
Patreon.
Nation's waiting for you.
Grass Nation's like, waiting for you. We're just there $1 patron. Come on, you guys got an extra dollar.
We got $5 and $10 patrons.
We're not even saying skip a cup of coffee. We're saying. Go look at your car on the bottom of the thing and get four quarters,
and that's what you got.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then
we're
you will shake out a couch cushion 12 times a year.
Wow. Well, guys, that was our pop music focused episode, a pop focused episode.
Music, yes. G Mac Cush.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't maybe classify him as pop, but a music focused episode.
Music focused pop.
Sure. Genre defining and defying episode of Go Touch Grass. And until next time,
Go Touch Grass!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.